No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the newest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. This is Jess Root, your host from CardsWire.com, the USA Today sports media group site covering the Arizona Cardinals, part of the NFL Wire. My co-host is Seth Cox, and he is from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. And he's doing double duty night on a Tuesday night. He's back-to-back, just finished recording the latest NFL Draft Breakdown podcast show, and now he's recording with us at Rise at Sea Red. So what is up in the draft world, and what do you got coming up on that show?
Not much. We're kind of in a holding pattern. We'll still be doing two shows a week, but kind of in a holding pattern as we wait for the combine to kind of finish up the last portion of our rankings. I know some people don't like the combine, but I will tell you this much. It saved me from the embarrassment of going all in on Paul Dawson last year, who I really liked on film. And then I watched him play, you watch him play and he did a nice job. And then he timed really slow, just like you and I type of slow. And, all of a sudden, I didn't like him as much. So it is what it is at this point. But I enjoy it. But it doesn't really help much with quarterbacks. So we went ahead and gave our initial and probably final. There might be some tweaks as we get some more information, or if somebody gets arrested or hurt, God forbid, heading into the actual draft. But we gave our quarterback rankings. We did some comparisons on the players. I do a high end, low end comparison, and with the explanation that I expect those guys' careers to usually fall somewhere in the middle towards, one end of the spectrum or the other. So, for instance, we were talking about Pat Mahomes of Texas Tech, and I won't spoil too much, but I had Mahomes' high-end comparison as young Derek Carr from the Oakland Raiders, which I think everybody, yourself included, would love to see in an Arizona Cardinals uniform. And for his low end, I went with an oldie but a goodie, a guy that got drafted because of his arm strength and his athleticism and just never, could harness his accuracy. And that was Kyle Bowler out of Cal back in 2003. Bowler was in the NFL for like, I think, 9 seasons. So was he a bust in the scope of where he's picked at 17th overall? Absolutely. But, he ended up playing in the NFL for a long time, making good money, and having a semi-productive career, just not to the point where the Baltimore Ravens wanted it, since, they happened to spend a first-round pick on it. So that's what I like to do. That's what we did tonight on the show, and it was really entertaining. So I hope everybody takes a listen and enjoys it.
And, who doesn't need another football podcast, especially now football is officially over. This is our post-Super Bowl show. As the 2016 season is done, we have a new champion in the New England Patriots in one of the greatest Super Bowls we've ever seen, at least one of the greatest finishes. We have some really great things to discuss, and that's what we're going to start with. Our show tonight is going to focus first and foremost about the Super Bowl, since the Cardinals weren't playing. So we'll kind of talk about the historic nature, what we saw from the Falcons and the Patriots, Then we're going to take a look at the Cardinals side of that. But, you know, seeing where the Super Bowl took us, were the Cardinals even a Super Bowl team really even at the start as we look back at the expectations that we had? Who should have gotten the, you know, MVP? Michael Floyd kind of caused such a stir. And then we're going to talk some Hawks and Cardinals stuff. We've got a little bit of news in the terms of, hey, guess what? He announced his return, as many expected. He also won the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. Kurt Warner, now a Hall of Famer. And we'll talk about the current status of Carson Palmer, as well as, well, as we look ahead to 2017 and the Cardinals in their hope to return to the playoffs and be a Super Bowl contending team, just how far away are there? That's coming up on for the next, you know, hour or so, maybe less than an hour, as we talk Arizona Cardinals football. And as we start this episode, I'd like to talk to you again, is let you know that this episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. It's a show. It's a service that you've now heard me talk about for several episodes. It's the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the United States, bringing you to your home food recipes. It's ready to make. It supports local farms, fisheries, and ranchers throughout the United States to bring you the food. So not only is it good stuff, but it's also responsible and in supportive of our local economy and our national economy. You get quality, fresh ingredients delivered to your door in a nice cold pack so that everything stays fresh. And one of the things I like about it the most is the fact that, you know, if you are in a situation at home where you're getting a rut into making something quick for the family or the expense of going out because you want to eat something different once you make it home, you kind of get the best of both worlds. You're able to prepare meals that are absolutely delicious and different perhaps than what you would normally prepare on your own. Something you might be able to find at restaurants, but not nearly the expense, and you're able to do it at home as well. The food is fantastic. The menu is great. Like I said, you can try things that you might normally not make at home. Like we had some here at the house. We had some cod sandwiches with apple slaw. A couple of things that were new to us. We don't eat a lot of fish in our home, and we had a couple of fish dishes that were great. The best part of it is that it's easy. They give you step-by-step exactly what you need to do, so you don't have to be a savant in the kitchen to be able to do it. The menu is flexible, so you can get the amount that you need, the food that you need. It's delicious, and it's also guaranteed. So check out this week's menu. To get your first three meals for free. Hopefully, if you haven't done it yet, head on over to blueapron.com/red because you'll get your first three meals free with free shipping. You'll love how good it feels, tastes, and to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. And the cost is real reasonable. For less than $9 per serving, you're getting great food at not a great expense. Again, that's blueapron.com/red. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Go ahead and get started when it talks about, let's talk about the Super Bowl now. Seth, you were actually back home. You flew in for the weekend and had some family stuff. And so you got to spend the Super Bowl, not on your own, but with family. And I was at home also with family and friends. Super Bowl. Did you get fooled into not paying attention after the first half? Because, you know, it looked like, wow, well, this isn't what we expected.
You know, everybody there, I think, was rooting for Atlanta. I don't know how was your household split up?
It was kind of split up. I've got my brother-in-law who lived some time in Boston. He's a big Patriots fan. Most everyone else was pro-Atlanta. I myself was more pro Tom Brady and anti Roger Goodell. So I liked either team winning, but I wanted, for history's purpose, I wanted to see Brady and Belichick win it.
Yeah. And so I think the pro Atlanta crowd at my home, made it so that we all kind of stayed focused because everybody was enthralled with this kind of beating that they were putting on the New England Patriots. That, you know, they'd finally slayed the dragon of Tom Brady. I mean, it really looked like Atlanta was just superior in all facets of the game. And nobody left early except my my grandparents, but that's more because they're not supposed to drive too much after dark, so they had to get home. But it ended up, you know, everybody stayed, and by the end, everybody's jaw was kind of just on the floor, like, what just happened?
We've been really spoiled, actually, for the last several years, for the most part.
The outside of Denver screwing it up. Denver,
right. They've been really gripping games. I mean, you go back to, you know, last season when you had Denver. Yeah, it wasn't. It looked like Denver was going to run away. They didn't quite run away with it, but most of these Super Bowls have been really intriguing. They haven't been as when I grew up all through the 90s watching the Super Bowls, it was ugly. Take out the first Buffalo Bills one. And then after that, the Super Bowls were kind of laughable. But, you know, we've really been treated to some good ones. If you go back to recent history, it's now been a long time. It's been, 8 years in the Cardinals in their Super Bowl. You had the Patriots and Seahawks. You've had some really just really gripping Super Bowl experiences here. And where does this rank for you? Because, you know, in terms of the totality of the game, obviously it wasn't pretty early on because New England just couldn't quite get anything going. But if you look at the totality of it, you have to think that perhaps this is three Super Bowl, at least in my lifetime.
Yeah, I would agree in that. You know, the Super Bowls I remember extremely well. It definitely ranks up there. I think more than anything, and I actually talked about this with some buddies, I think more than anything for me that sometimes, you know, you always want your team to succeed. And you always want your team to be good, make the playoffs. Obviously, love for the Arizona Cardinals to win a Super Bowl. But I said, if nothing else was changed, nothing else, and all you did was switch the Cardinals season and the Falcons season, I would take the Arizona Cardinals season 100 times out of 100 out of what happened to Atlanta in that game. I don't know if I would have been able to get up and go to work the next day if the Arizona Cardinals blew a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl after.
You think about how crushing it was when the Cardinals took the lead in the Super Bowl against the Steelers that season after 2008 season, and just how devastating it was when I remember it was this realization, because I didn't go into the Super Bowl thinking the Cardinals had a chance. And then they took the lead. There was this belief of, I never thought I'd ever see this in my entire life. And it was about to happen. And then Santonio Holmes. And so yeah,
that was
hard enough.
Exactly. It was a moment. Can you imagine spending, what was it, an hour plus thinking, holy crap, my team that I've cheered for years that has just, always found a way to screw it up, they're going to do it finally. And then it just completely gets turned on its head to the point where, you can't even fathom, you can't fathom this stuff. Like, you can't make this stuff up.
Well, and what's amazing is the fact that you look at some of the heat that the Kyle Shanahan is taking for the plays he called and things that happened in the second half and in that fourth quarter of that game. Think about this. That Falcons team, I could totally see, because Bruce Arians wouldn't have called plays any differently. And you look at, you know, a couple of critical plays with Matt Ryan, that's totally Carson Palmer. The Cardinals most definitely could have had that happen to them in the exact same scenario, because Arians would have done the same thing with the play calling. We've seen it dozens of times. And we all know that Carson Palmer is a mistake away from disaster all the time. As great as he's been, that's his career. His career is oh, Carson. And it's one of those Carson moments. So,
and Matt Ryan had two of them. I mean, he had the fumble that led to the Patriots' quick score, and then he had the sack that you just, as a veteran of, what, 9 seasons in the NFL, you just can't take that sack. And I'm talking about the play in the fourth quarter where it was second down and they were at the 23 yard line, I believe. So it would have been a 40-yard field goal, but nothing, you know, crazy. And he got sacked for a 10-yard loss, which would have made it a 13-yard loss to make it third and 23. And then, you know, and then he gets sacked again. And it's just like, what just happened? Did you really just go full Carson Palmer on us? Like we've seen that happen before. It's crazy.
Yeah. And you know, and this is where it takes me. Remember back, you know, forever ago when our Cardinals were Super Bowl, they had Super Bowl expectations. And we look at how the season unfolded, taking the Cardinal season out of the picture. If we look at where they are at day one, and you look at and you look at the team the Falcons were in the Super Bowl, we were all just on the – I think we all hyped ourselves way too much because Cardinals going to be as good as – I mean, here's the thing. Okay, defensively, I guess we're supposed to be as good as the Falcons were, I guess. But you've looked at – how the season happened, and based on what we saw from these teams, really a Super Bowl team, were they? Or maybe they were. That's the thing, is I look back and I can't quite tell because there's things to look at and it says, well, problems. That cost them 4 to 5 wins right there. So we're looking at 11-12. We're looking at 11-12 wins, perhaps. And I guess they'd be more like the Packers. But had everything gone right? Is it even everything going right? If you look at how the season happened, they probably still aren't a Super Bowl team.
And even if they are, we already knew that they weren't as good as New England because New England beat them with Jimmy Garoppolo. So, and the way Tom Brady played this year, I think he finished with 35 touchdowns to only 5 interceptions. That's including the playoffs. I mean, that's just stupid. I mean, think about it. The Cardinals have had one quarterback in their entire history. And now, I mean, it includes the playoffs, but the Cardinals have only had one quarterback in their entire history throw for 35 touchdowns in 16 games. Tom Brady just did it in 15 games. And he only threw 5 interceptions. So,
yes.
Could they have competed with Atlanta? I mean, I don't think so. We saw Atlanta run. We saw the fact that Atlanta's defense could stop Arizona because they were able to create pressure up front. And we know what Carson Palmer does with pressure around him. And on the flip side, their defense just wasn't fast enough. And their secondary had too many holes in it. And to be fair, Atlanta has too many weapons. I mean, the fact that you can bring Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman out, you know, your second wide receiver, Mohamed Sanu, is probably really, you know, a really nice secondary wide receiver. Taylor Gabriel is your John Brown of that offense. And then Julio Jones is a freak of nature. I mean,
well, and Arizona's defense, at least in the secondary, there is such a drop off to Peterson to whoever it is on the other side
that they get picked on, and
we saw Justin Hardy, Taylor Gabriel, and Mohamed Sanu completely dismantle the Cardinals. Now I'll give obviously this. I mean, Malcolm Butler got he didn't have a good game.
No, he looked silly
a few times, but so he's not as good. He's not as good a quarterback, cornerback at all as Patrick Peterson. But the drop off from him to the Patriots' next guy isn't nearly as pronounced.
Exactly. And you know, and this is no shot at Bruce Arians, but let's be honest. The Patriots are the best coach team in the NFL. You know, that's a shot at every NFL coach at that point. I mean, there's nobody that can match wits with Bill Belichick. So I just think that's, you know, that's a fair assessment. If we're looking at it completely, and you know, the Patriots started horrendously, and you still were always waiting, right? Like, and after they scored that first touchdown, I looked at, you know, my family. I said, they're going to make this game interesting. Now, I didn't think they were going to win still, but I'm like, they're going to come back and make this a tight game. And everybody's like, no, that's not going to happen. And I'm like, no, just wait.
And then literally everything that had to happen
happened. And
that's
so I think that's, and so, you know, I just don't think this season Arizona was there. I think last season they were. I think healthy Carson Palmer in 2014 they were. But again, it needed to fall. Those seasons needed to occur in 2016, because in 2014 and 2015 we're talking about, you know, superior defenses winning out. Obviously the Patriots won the Super Bowl in 14, but you know, they did a nice job defensively still. You know, and they're just here's the reality. I've never, even as a Cardinals fan, even as much as I love the Cardinals, if the Cardinals were going head up with the Patriots in the Super Bowl, I'm going to take the Patriots. It's just, they have, if it's Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, I don't know
you
how.
You can't bet against them. You just can't. I
understand
that. Not to.
I understand they've lost two Super Bowls, so, you know, that's great. But they've also lost one more Super Bowl than the Cardinals have ever been to. So, you know, let's be fair about that. They've got a little experience at this whole thing.
And you know, that's at least early on, that's where I was impressed with the Falcons early on, because I expected, I remember dating back to being a teenager and seeing John Elway in the first of his Super Bowls, and seeing these quarterbacks, these elite level quarterbacks, play nervous. We've seen it in lots of Super Bowls. Players, quarterbacks who were new to the Super Bowl, played nervous. Matt Ryan didn't play that way, and I was real impressed. Now, late in the game, he tightened up, which you know, that we saw the result of that. But you know, yeah, I give my Falcons, at least early on, they did, as you know, defensively, I think they did as well as they could have, and then they just sort of fell apart, because the, you know, I expected going into this game that the Patriots, that they would just, that the Falcons defense was going to cost them, because they were, and they did well enough, they got the turnovers, but ultimately they didn't stop the Patriots enough. Ultimately, as we saw, they ran twice as many plays. The Patriots did literally two plays for every one for the Falcons. And that defense isn't great. It wasn't even statistically good to begin with. And then to be on the field for over 80 plays, you knew that was going to be doomed.
And I think that was the Falcons strategy, or sorry, the Patriots strategy, that they were going to keep them on the field for a long time and say, we dare you to, you know, we dare you to keep up that pace. And they just couldn't do it. And maybe that's what they saw. Maybe they saw the fact that the Falcons couldn't keep up that pace. I honestly don't know. I'm not going to guess to know, but it, you know, it worked.
Well, take those two turnovers away, the Patriots end up running away with that game.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And so, you know, it's one of those things that I think the best team in the NFL won this year.
And that's completely fair. Now let's put our Cardinals things. Let's put our Cardinals caps on right here. Obviously the debate that kind of went around the nation for those couple days, you know, Sunday night, Monday, maybe into Tuesday, was, well, Tom Brady got the MVP. Should he have, you know, Tom Brady's going to get the MVP, but James.
Oh,
and you know,
Super Bowl MVP, yeah. Sorry.
Yes. Super Bowl MVP. That's what I'm talking about. Super Bowl MVP. And so you've got Tom Brady who gets the Super Bowl MVP, and you've got James White. You know, obviously Tom Brady's going to get the MVP, but let's take a look at this. If it were the Cardinals in the same Super Bowl, and it were Carson Palmer who put up those numbers at quarterback, and David Johnson that had put up those numbers as the running back, is the result the same? Based on what we saw from David Johnson throughout the season, I think it probably would have gone towards Johnson.
You know, but the difference being that I think Johnson would have been better as a runner, and that would have made a difference in this game. I think Johnson would have had a better game as a runner, and so it would have influenced, you know, whoever votes for that. I can't even remember that he was, you know, the superior player in that game.
Because White had – that was like the David Johnson with 14 catches, had the two touchdowns, the two-point conversion. That's – you know, I think Bill Bell – I mean, Bruce Arians looks at that game and goes, yeah, that's what I see when the running game isn't necessarily working and his running back still kills it.
Exactly. So, but, you know, it's hard to – take away from Brady what he did in this game, because they were still, you know, you just talked about they were still catches. So Brady was the one calling the plays and making the reads and finding White in areas to make plays with the ball in his hand. He did a great job though. I think, like I said, I think if he would have done a better job as a runner, he would have probably won the award, but the fact that he struggled as a running back in, statistically, he's not going to get as much. He didn't get as much love as he probably should have.
One final note about the Super Bowl, and this does have a Cardinals angle to it. It has to do with our former not so nice favorite player in Michael Floyd. He now has himself a Super Bowl ring. Granted, he was inactive for the AFC title game. He was inactive for the Super Bowl. However, that didn't keep him from at least making some headlines here in the Phoenix area. As he was seen, there's a picture of him that he shared on Instagram of him kissing the trophy, the Lombardi trophy. And then what ensued was a whole lot of hate from Cardinals fans. Now, I'm not big on the whole social media trolling thing. Obviously, Cardinals fans should get over the fact that Michael Floyd is on the Patriots and he got a ring. You should know he didn't really do much to contribute to that team. He is a champion. He will get a ring. But the vitriol that came from that, you know, I thought it was maybe in poor choice, not necessarily the first picture. Britton Golden and Tony Jefferson defended Mike, and I get that. They're friends of his. They want to see him. But it felt like, for a lot of Cardinals fans, that Floyd was rubbing it in their face like, ha, you guys cut me. Look what happened to me now. And when we see him as, you stole money from the Cardinals all year, you were terrible, then you go and drive drunk, endangering yourself and people in our area where we live, and then have no remorse about it. And you just, you know, because you screwed up, you ended up in a better situation and winning a Super Bowl. The poor choice that I found, that I thought was after that, the tweet he had on Tuesday about like, whoa, I thought people would be happy for me. I didn't know people hated me for winning a ring, but no, well, I'm a champion. I think that was really dumb on his part.
Yeah, and it goes to the tone deafness of the entire situation. You know, like you said, he didn't do anything to earn the spot that he got for the Patriots. He, you know, I wrote literally this exact sentence: you drank your way out of Arizona after throwing up all over yourself during the season. I mean, it's not like on the field, like literally, like he didn't do anything on the field in a make or break season where the Cardinals were begging him to be the player that they drafted, right? Like they had just been waiting and waiting and waiting. Like this guy Please be the player we drafted. Please be.
They needed him so badly this year because of the John Brown illness. They needed that. Michael Floyd had to be Michael Floyd for this offense to be good.
And he just literally, I mean, he threw up all over himself. He was awful. And, you know, I think that's what soured Arizona Cardinals fans was, oh, I don't understand how you can't be happy for me. Well, it wasn't like you just left, dude. It wasn't like, and I get that you were cut, but it wasn't just like, oh, he was cut because he didn't produce, or he was cut because he was a salary cap casualty, or he just signed a big deal in New England. It was because you drank your way off the team after you had not produced literally all season and been a complete bust of a 13th overall pick. And
it wasn't even that. He was terrible on the field. He drank, you know, he got busted. And then after that, when the team tried, you know, well, according to Michael Bidwell, they gave him every opportunity to make things right, and he didn't care. He was like, whatever. And he didn't try to make the, he didn't show any remorse. It was like, he didn't care.
Well, and it comes down to the fact that he's done this before. You know, so this was his third DUI, I believe, because he got two at Notre Dame, I believe.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like we're talking about a guy who had one incident and, you know, you can forget. Like, this is your third strike, dude. Like, I love the idea. Oh, you know, Britton Golden's probably a really good guy and everything, but for him to tweet out, if you've never made a mistake, well, I can tell you what, I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, but one thing I have not done three times is get a DUI. You know, for me, I've never done it once. That's my goal in life, is never to have a DUI. But I can tell you what, if I was ever, you know, if I ever was dumb enough to get one, I could tell you what I wouldn't do again. And that would be find a way to get another DUI. And so, you know, so it just comes across as tone deaf. Oh, I don't understand why people aren't happy for me. Really? You don't understand why people aren't happy for you? Let me list the reasons why. Because these fans, they loved you, and they gave you the benefit of the doubt for five seasons that you were the guy, that you could turn it on and be the guy.
And even though, you know, I'm reminded of, 2013. Oh, I remember 2013. Remember when we had the conversation? We had it on this show, one of our first shows. We were talking about how we are seeing Michael Floyd become, he's the best receiver on the Cardinals. Oh my gosh. Those words came out of my mouth. Convictedly so.
Yeah.
They came out of my mouth with conviction.
And, you know, it's unfortunate because that was the expectation, and he chose not to live up to those. He just chose not to live up to those expectations, you know, and then, like I said, doesn't understand why.
All right. So coming up next on Rise Up C-Red, we're going to move to the Cardinals. Enough of the Super Bowl. Enough of that bum Michael Floyd, who's got a championship now. Next up, we're going to talk about some of the things that have happened over the last little bit. We know that Larry Fitzgerald is back. Carson Palmer is expected to be back, but he hasn't said anything yet. Oh, and Fitz and Kurt Warner with some awards. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on Rise Up C-Red, and we get to talk about now. It's not about those stupid Patriots. Those Patriots that keep winning championships and things like that. So here we know. Big news. Larry Fitzgerald is back for 2017. It turns out that Bruce Arians was working under some inside information when he used the actual phrase that he's got the itch. Those actually were words that Fitz gave him, because apparently Fitz felt the itch. And when he was watching the Cowboys-Packers game, he's like, no, I can't be at home watching these games. I still need to be playing. So that's great news for Cardinals fans. So what does that mean now for the Cardinals to have Larry Fitzgerald back?
You know, I think it means that Carson Palmer's coming back, but because you and I talked about it last week, it literally makes no sense for him to come back if Carson Palmer's not coming back. But I think it means that they don't need a veteran wide receiver, but I don't think it changes their need for a wide receiver overall, because we're back in the same situation next offseason. So, you know, it's just one of those things. I think they have to address the wide receiver position. I've never thought it needed to be at 13, even when Fitz may have retired, but I have always said that it needs to happen this year in the draft at some point. And it can't be, you know, a fourth, fifth round guy. It needs to be, it probably needs to be a different type of wide receiver. It probably doesn't need to be JJ Nelson or John Brown 2.0. But you know, we'll see what happens with all of that. But other than that, I don't know. It doesn't really change a whole lot other than it continues to keep the expectations for the Arizona Cardinals high, correct?
That's exactly. I mean, why is Fitz back if he's he's not going to come back with the expectation to be on a 500 team. He's coming back because he wants to win. And obviously, the competitive fire is still there. He's under contract with the Cardinals. So if he was going to come back, it had to be with the Cardinals. But clearly, he sees enough in this team, and the comments are, if Carson Palmer's our quarterback, we're really, really good. Which leads us to this. What is up with Carson not saying anything yet? Because guess what's coming up on Friday? His contract. His salary becomes fully guaranteed.
Yeah, and I mean, they're not going to cut him. I mean, they can't.
No, they're not, but...
It would be a real bad move on his part, bad form on Carson Palmer's part, if he was to not play in 2017, but also not tell them before that deadline. Now, he still has to give the money back, right, if he retires?
Whatever bonus. That's the part I don't know what it was, because when they extended him, we never saw what the terms were in terms of signing bonus.
Okay. So, but yeah, I mean, you would hope out of everything that the Cardinals have done for him, as much as he's done for the Cardinals, that he would, you know, give them and he may have already said, like, hey, I'll be back. And, you know,
my expectation is this. Bruce Arians, when he said that, you know, he thinks that Larry's getting the itch, he had insider information. Bruce also said just at the end of last week that he says that he expects to hear from Carson real, real soon. You know, he's out there skiing in Idaho or Utah right now. And I think probably, you know, as it kind of happened last week with our podcast show, you know, we talked about the Carson Palmer report that was out there. And then before I even had the show cut and published, it was all debunked. So expect he will say something. But it's just, why? Like, unless he's just, I want to go away. I don't want to do anything, and I'm just, let me do this. This is his kind of diva thing. He's like, no, let me be with my family, and I'll tell you Thursday.
Yeah, why the secrecy? Why the secrecy? I don't know.
There's a lot of, a lot of the local radio here is kind of speculating that he's using it to kind of send a message about what the team does, that they need to make sure they protect him. And you know,
maybe. But again, we've had this conversation. How much can you invest on the offensive line? At some point, these guys just need to play well. Like, hey, you know, we've invested two first-round picks. We've invested two high-dollar free agents. We've invested multiple second-day or third-day picks. You know, and multiple veteran free agent signings. You know, you can't have five first round picks and high priority free agents on your starting line in the NFL. At some point, you just need those players to produce. And, you know, it's ironic that the Cardinals had their most success when their starting offensive line was something called Ulrich John. I don't even remember who was playing right guard at that point.
Wasn't it
Evan Bain?
Well, no. The first they had they had bumped Watford into guard at right guard because Wetzel was playing
left.
I don't remember.
But yeah, so it was Ulrich. I think it was Ulrich John. But then he went on I don't even remember. See, I can't even tell you who the starting five on the offensive line were. I know AQ Shipley was there, and I know
and Upati was
and
there.
Upati was there, and Wetzel was there.
I think it ended up being their best line with late in the year is when they had Humphreys at left tackle. They had Watford at right tackle, and they had Bame at right guard. I think maybe.
Let's look at this.
No, I know. No, it had to be Wetzel. Wetzel's left tackle was by then. It was DJ was already done. He was already concussed.
I gotta look at this.
Oh, who knows?
But yeah, I mean, you look at it, and here we go. John Wetzel, Taylor Boggs. That's who we're forgetting. And then Earl Watford was the right tackle.
Oh, yeah.
So you had a Wetzel, Upati, Shipley, Boggs, and Watford offensive line against the Seattle Seahawks and the LA Rams. And you put up 78 points in those two games and win them both. Like, so. Yeah, I mean, come on. Like, I think it turned out to be something we've talked about on the show a bunch. I think it turned out to be more scheme. Bruce Arians, you know, went away from his beloved seven-step drop deep passing game and worked more short, and you know, it worked out.
Well, and, you know, that's – if John Brown can somehow be more John Brown-like, I think the season goes so much more differently, and I think the offense goes much more successful. It's obviously got Fitz, obviously got David Johnson. They got Jermaine Gresham late in the year. But they just never, outside of Jermaine Gresham, they just couldn't get, they never had the stuff down the field until JJ kind of broke out sort of late in the year. It just, you know, that's the thing. Is he's pulling a power play? And I go back to this. Is Palmer pulling a power play on this? I go back to the Cincinnati days when he was ready to, when he packed up and retired, I've got $80 million in the bank. I don't need to play football for this. People took that the wrong way from what we know. And it appears based on what we heard, was it this last year or the year before when they played the Bengals and the story came out as to what it was, it came down to Carson's body. He felt that he wasn't going to last more another year or two in the league with the pounding he was taking in Cincinnati. And that's why he said, you know, I can't play like this. It's like, if they're not going to be serious about winning and you know, and if I'm going to die out there, and maybe that's it. But like you said, what else can they try on the offensive line? They just not had the success. It has not because of lack of trying. Goodness. Gerard Valdir, a buttload of money. They paid Mike Upati a whole bunch of money. They drafted DJ. They drafted Cooper. You know, they even brought back Lyle Sunline for a year. Yeah. They're gonna draft an offensive lineman against this year, aren't they, in the first round or second round? Probably.
Yeah, I mean, there's no good one to draft in the first round. But, yeah, I mean, in the second round, it could make sense. And, you know, you just look at it, and I get – Palmer's point of view, like he wants to be able to enjoy his life. I get that. I do. But I mean, at what point do you understand that like they've put everything they can into this, and you know, you either have to, you know, crap or get off the pot at this point.
Yeah. It's just interesting to see. It's been a real roller coaster of it based on reports that have come out. Now, based on Bruce Arians, the last thing we heard from him, it sounds like I expect to hear from him Wednesday or Thursday or some sort of announcement, or maybe his salary will go guaranteed, and then he says, all right, I'm coming back to play.
And I think both of us would be completely floored if he doesn't come back.
Oh, completely. That would change my outlook on him as a human being if that were the case, personally.
You know what it would do, though, is it would definitely drive traffic for a couple of days.
Yeah, it would. So, but I mean, as a fan, no, as a web editor, yeah, sure. But no, because but then again, we hear these reports, you know, Ian Rappaport talks about how he's struggling to feel, he's still, you know, he hasn't quite gotten better yet. He's still not feeling right. He's, you know, it's a real possibility. People saying they've seen him lay his last down. And then Bruce Harris, yeah, I expect to hear from him real soon. Just stuff. This is very, very odd off season, which brings us to this part. Actually, before we move on to the next part, the part we have to kind of talk about, this is the other part that happened over the weekend. The Cardinals were in the news for some really good stuff. And that was one, Kurt Warner, third time. He's now Hall of Famer. Larry Fitzgerald, co-winner of the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, along with Eli Manning. I mean, was there any doubt in your mind that Kurt Warner didn't deserve, or was there any doubt in your mind that he deserved to be in the Hall of Fame?
No, I thought that was happening finally. You know, some of these guys, it just takes a while because of as people come up and things of that nature. I know people were upset that Terrell Owens didn't get in, but, you know, things happen, so.
And he should be. I mean, really, he should be in. But make things any better by the way he reacted at either. You know, it's one of those things. The NFL with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, some people have to wait. I mean, I thought, actually, that Kurt Warner's, like, based on the last 2 years, I thought that his first year of eligibility was probably his best year, because I knew the next year, last year, was Brett Favre. And while we've seen two quarterbacks inducted before at the same time, it's hard to do when there's so many other deserving players. Now, Kurt Warner getting in, this was a perfect year to do it. I believe he's a Hall of Famer. He doesn't have the same career, but you look at some of the numbers with that lull and with that really bad middle of his career when he was with the Giants and, you know, languishing in Arizona before 2007. Before the second half of 2007, when he was just kind of backup-y stuff, his numbers in his career, now granted, and I will add the caveat, of course his numbers are going to be like, because passing numbers have gone out, passing numbers are incredibly skewed now when you compare it to 20 years ago. But even still, he is right on par or better than all of the quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame that are in the Hall of Fame now. He's got multiple MVPs, and you know, that alone, multiple MVPs, the four guys before him, the four quarterbacks in the NFL history who have multiple MVPs were already in the Hall of Fame. And the other three outside of him are Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and Aaron Rodgers. All of those guys are going to the Hall of Fame. I mean, that alone says he's got to go in. Then he's got he took two more of the franchises in the Rams and the Cardinals and made them real. And then after his departure, guess what happened to them again? So there's doubt in my mind. I mean,
the Rams still haven't recovered.
They haven't. There was this Mark Bulger was okay for a bit, then he fell apart, and the Cardinals managed to rebound for a little bit. But Kurt Warner had, you know, he made a huge impact on the league. You really can't talk about the league from 2000, from 1999 to 2009. He's in that conversation as one of the elite quarterbacks during that time. So, you know, he didn't have your typical Hall of Fame career, but he, of course, deserved to be in it.
Yeah, I agree. I think he deserves it. I'm, you know, happy that he's getting in. You know, and you just look at it, he's a guy that was able to accomplish just a ton in a short amount of time. He did play 12 seasons, but only 116 starts. The craziest stat to me is that he only has a losing record with the Cardinals, and he was 27-30 with the Cardinals. So he wasn't even that bad. He threw for more yards and with the Cardinals than he did with the Rams. You know, he threw for two less touchdowns, and six less interceptions. You know, you look at his Rams, his 11 seasons with the Rams and Cardinals, and it is just amazing to look at those numbers. and see what he did. And it's unfortunate that, you know, he was just unable to win that second Super Bowl ever, but he is one of the greatest quarterbacks in the Super Bowl history as well. And that does matter when you're looking at that stuff, what these guys do in the Super Bowl. And you look at what he did in the Super Bowl for the Rams and the Cardinals, and he's, you know, put up huge numbers. It's complete.
Well, yeah, up until Tom Brady this last weekend, he had his three Super Bowls were the three most productive Super Bowls from a quarterback ever. All three of them until now, because Tom Brady, you know, it's Tom Brady. And then Fitz, you know, I don't know, you know, I have a really hard time with when you have this man of the year thing and you look at the three players that were left in Greg Olsen and Eli Manning and Larry Fitzgerald. I don't know how you choose. And it looked like, based on what they saw, is, you know, both Fitz and Eli were finalists before. They both deserve it. Not that Greg Olsen didn't deserve it, but holy cow, just the fact that Fitz just adds something else to his legacy is amazing. You know, he literally has accomplished every single thing you could do in a career. He has stats among the greatest ever. He has money, gobs and gobs of money. He has the accolades and awards with the Pro Bowl. You know, he's been selected the Pro Bowl 10 times. Only Jerry Rice is more under as a receiver. He now has the off-the-field legacy. No one, I don't know if there's a person in the league that doesn't like him. In fact, even I don't think there's a single NFL fan anywhere that doesn't like Larry Fitzgerald. Everyone loves him. The only thing you need is a title. He has to get a title. And that's the only thing left to you know, to add to the top of his career, which is fantastic to see that, you know, because we know how hard he works off the field for worthy causes. And he does a whole lot in the limelight, and he does a whole lot out of the limelight.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things, you and I think we've talked about it before. I'm not sure. I know I've written about it at least, but it's one of those situations where you get a player like Fitz who is, you know, a guy that you just admire. And like you said, for his on the field, his off the field, his just all of his accomplishments. And, you know, you look at it, he's eighth now in touchdowns. He should get to sixth next year. He might be
seventh. He could get to third in yardage.
Yeah, he might be seventh because I don't know what's going on with Antonio Gates still. But so maybe he's the seventh. You know, you look at it, he's gonna be top 10 in everything that matters in NFL history in receiving. And it was just one of those situations where I count myself, and I know you do, just lucky that we got to watch this guy's career. It's unfortunate that he has not won a Super Bowl yet, but hopefully him coming back signals that this is one more run.
It absolutely. That's hopefully this is it, because I don't know how much we can expect from him. Coming up with the final segment on Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to talk about just a little bit. What's left for the Cardinals? How far are they? As we look ahead to 2017, how close are they to that Super Bowl? We're back for the final spot, final segment on Rise Up Sea Red, and let's look at next year. The goal is obviously we got to get Larry a title. The Cardinals have to get Larry a title somehow. How close are they? How close are they? I mean, as the team is constituted right now, what needs to happen for them to be a title contender? I mean, if we look at what their season was this year, how close were they? Was it a few plays here and there? Was it, you know, then we look at Atlanta, you look at Green Bay, you look at Dallas, you look at Pittsburgh, you look at New England. Is this a reality? Is this too much to ask? Are they close, or is it going to take the right amount of balls bouncing their way.
Yeah, I think it's going to take the right amount of balls bouncing their way on top of the fact that they are close. I still think they're a top, 12 team in the league, which is a playoff team. I think they probably win a playoff game this year if they would have gotten in with how they were playing at the end of offensively. And then they probably get rolled in Atlanta. Maybe they squeak by Dallas. I don't know, but they probably get rolled in Atlanta anyway. So, they need to figure out. They've got to figure out how they're going to combat the secondary issues, because they have two broken safeties and then a cornerback two that can't cover. So you got to figure that out. You got to figure out what is going to go on with Calais Campbell, because your defensive line doesn't necessarily inspire confidence if you take him off the line. I mean, are you really scared of Rodney Gunter, Corey Peters, and Josh Morrow as your starting defensive line? And then I think offensively you just need to find that rhythm, and you need to focus the offense realistically more on David Johnson than you are on, Carson Palmer. And I think you still need to find a couple young weapons, but and that sounds like a lot. I just list off a lot of stuff, but you look at what the Falcons did in 2 years to get to where they were, and they were seconds away from winning the Super Bowl. I mean, literally seconds away. So, they can do it. It just needs to be done at the, at the right point. I think they can do it. I really do, but they need to figure out, they got to figure out a couple certain things.
And for me, it's a matter of, they are, I don't think they're going to be, as we look at the season moving forward, I don't think they're in the same category as Dallas or Green Bay or maybe even Seattle. And that's because of Carson Palmer. As good as we've seen Carson Palmer be, and as talented a quarterback as he is, he still is a wild card in the sense of what he's going to give you when it matters. He's not done it yet in his career, so we can't expect him to do it, per se, but you can put the right playthings around him. I think they're, as we look forward into what we can expect from next year, depending on how the free agency goes, if John Brown can do this and that, if his health can somehow get better, they would be for me. I don't see them as a Super Bowl favorite like they came into this season, but I see them as among the contenders, not the favorites, but the next tier. And when you're there, at least all you need is a little momentum, you need a little bit of a roll late in the season. They had it in 2015 until things fell apart, that week seven, the Tyrann Mathieu injury and then the Seattle debacle. They kind of lost that, and they started the season the same sort of funk, and then they found it again late this year. So the things, it's, they're close, but they're not in the same boat for me as some of these teams that are already ready made to be high class performers, like even Atlanta right now. In Atlanta, it seems to me they're in a situation where it could be, they could take a step back, possibly, because we haven't seen it because of their defense. But you see a Seattle, you see a Green Bay, you see a Dallas, you see Pittsburgh, and those are teams you think, okay, no matter really what happens, they're going to be in the mix. And the Cardinals need just enough right things to happen for them to be back in the mix, in my opinion.
Right, and I think a couple things have to break their way. I think Denver needs to still be figuring out the quarterback situation. I think Oakland needs to not take the next step like they look like they're going to. Houston needs to not figure out the quarterback situation. I mean, good teams in the AFC, somebody needs to beat the Patriots in the playoffs before the Super Bowl. The NFC, I just think, is a crapshoot and is completely wide open, because until Seattle fixes their offensive line, I don't know if they're actually good.
That is true. But the fact that they, with the talent they have defensively and with Russell Wilson, that does just make them more ready-made than the Cardinals, at least in my opinion, simply because, you know, we've seen Carson Palmer in his statistically average years, like, you know, his typical years. They don't equate to winning football.
That's
football.
Yeah, that's true. And so, you know,
so we need to see, we can't expect, it'd be foolish to expect 2015 again, but we need more than 2016, or we need more of late 2016 all year. And that's, you know, he played at such a high level for all 2015. He played, there was that string at the end of 2013, his six games in 2014, and then the whole year for 2015. You don't need him to be playing at MVP level, but you need him playing basically the same sort of level he was playing the last half of last year, pretty much. If that can be the norm, rather than his career has been two good games, one bad game, two good games, one bad game, a good game, one bad game. And instead of, we got to eliminate the bads and go from fantastic to he was okay.
Yeah, and that's what you need. You need the Palmer experience to happen somewhere in the middle of the season. You want a good start to the season, have that Palmer experience maybe through like week 9 to 13, and then him get on another like 6-7 game roll, obviously culminating in the Super Bowl, and then everybody riding off into the sunset, and then you and I have
Fitz can retire, and Palmer can retire, and Arians can retire, and then
think of all the content we would have for that. Like, we get to talk about the coaching replacing a legend, yeah, of a coach. We get to talk about the legend of a quarterback replacing the legend of a wide receiver. And then we get to talk about, is Carson Palmer a Hall of Famer now? Because his stats, you know, are better than Kurt Warner's stats, and he has the same amount of super. Like, it's just a fascinating scenario that is, you know, needs to play out selfishly for you and I, not because we're writers, but because, damn it, we deserve a Super Bowl win as fans.
Not in an entitled sort of way, but dadgummit, wouldn't it be nice to finally be part of that, to know what it's like?
Because
I want to know what it's like.
And I don't mean this in a negative way, because I enjoy a lot of the Falcons fans. I'm friends with them on Twitter, and we talk. But I am glad they're still one of the 13 teams that have never won a Super Bowl. Because as that list gets whittled down to the Cardinals and then a bunch of teams created in the 90s and 2000s, it's going to start to anger me.
Yeah, it's already – we live a sad existence. But we chose that when we decided to – stupid Cardinals for coming here to Arizona and making me be their fan. So much disappointment, so much sadness. Yeah, one of these days, maybe in our lifetimes it will happen. Hopefully next year. But so you're probably not caring to listen to this, you know, nostalgic, you know, whining that we're doing as fans right now. But thank you all for listening to another edition of Rise Up Sea Red. We're on, I think, episode 148. For those of you who've been with us the entire time, I'm amazed. For those of you who are joining us, hey, we've got 148 shows now that you can go back and listen to. Hey, if you go back to some of our first shows, you can hear some really dumb stuff that we said. You can tweet us at it. Tweet it and tell us how dumb we were. I think I've forgotten most of what I said in those shows, except for the Michael Floyd thing. That really sticks out of my head. But, you know, we'll be back in 2 weeks. We're going to take a week off next week. There's not very much to talk about right now unless some great news. I think there might be an exception. If Carson Palmer calls it quits.
Yeah, we'll be back next week because we'll have a hate-filled show.
let's bring the pitchforks and torches and everything then. But other than that happening,
I think we would deserve it too. Let's be honest.
Yes. Other than that, we'll be back in 2 weeks and we'll be preparing more for free agency. We'll be talking team needs, talking more about the free agency possibilities as we move forward. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. You can find us pretty much anywhere. We're featured on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, on CardsWire, on Blog Talk Radio. You can find us on iTunes, to Radio, Google Play, and on Facebook at Rise Up Sea Red or Twitter for Rise Up Sea Red. That's Seth Cox from Revenge of Birds. I'm Jess Root from CardsWire. This is Rise Up Sea Red.